Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Today's Issues, the name of the show. I'm Tim with Ed Wesley, and now Steve Paisley Jordahl joins us. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Tim, and everybody.
Steve's got the brown and blue Paisley shirt on.
I got the Paisley today, yes.
Brown and blue typically don't go together, but on a Paisley, you can get away with it, don't you?
I think so.
Yeah, well, it's a lot on a Paisley as far as the color scheme
goes. That's true. I have
I got shoes
colors.
That have brown and blue.
Yeah, most people don't look down, but Ed,
I don't think that's black.
Ed, I look down on you.
Blue.
Navy blue.
I look down on you, Ed. I see your shoes.
Okay. Well, a lot of people look down on me.
Okay.
They don't overlook you. They look down.
Yes.
We're 45 seconds in. We're about to lose control of this
that's
show.
That's right.
We need to get back.
And not for the first time.
Yes. Hey, do we have any weather people here? Because I don't know what happened to our global warming? I was counting on global warming to at least Thanksgiving, and
yeah,
it's 38 degrees here in Northeast Mississippi last night.
It was overnight. It got
now,
cool.
I wonder what it did. I wonder what it was in like New York or something like that.
I turned my defroster on just to get out of the driveway.
Loving it.
So it's fall in many parts of the country now, and you can tell it because the temperatures have dropped through New York City.
I got Colorado Springs while
I'm
there.
What's Colorado Springs?
51 degrees right now. Today, low of 32. New York City?
New York City? Yeah, New York City. I want to know what New York is right now.
All right, where my son happens to live, it's 55 degrees right now, low of 43 today.
Okay. Well, anyway, I'm just saying that fall is here for sure.
Down in the South, this is a little bit early.
Yeah,
I remember Thanksgivings in the past and Christmases in the past where I was outside with shorts.
Yeah.
So
I've only been here eight years,
but I think several of those years we've had what we call out in California an Indian summer, which means it gets cold and then about October, November, you get through 2 or 3 weeks of really hot weather back.
Yeah.
I don't know if that'll happen this year, but
hot weather is a wonderful thing.
I like cold weather.
Well, I guess to each his own. Yeah. You also wear a Paisley.
I know. No one's ever accused me of
brown and blue.
Having good taste.
You also wear a Paisley and it's 2024. All right.
That was brutal.
Yeah.
Proud of you.
Sorry, Steve.
Proud of
you. Okay.
Yeah, I'm just weeping over in the corner here in a little fetal position.
But we don't look down on you.
All right, Steve, what's your first story you bring unto us?
All right. So DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, we're kind of seeing a little bit of a walk back in a lot of places. A lot of schools and businesses are saying this isn't working out so well. It's not working out that well at the University of Michigan either, but boy, are they doubling down. So University of Michigan.
The Wolverines.
They're spending $250 million since 2016 on DEI initiatives. They have 241 people at the school that have DEI-type jobs in that field.
You mean promoting DEI?
Their job is to enforce DEI standards.
Wow.
Or
they have their flashlight and their belt and their
Barney Fife. Yeah. Attitude. I don't even want to. I don't
diversity,
even want to.
Equality, and inclusion, right? That's
yes.
what they're enforcing.
By one estimate, according to the New York Times, the university has built the largest DEI bureaucracy of any public university. However, the Times is saying, this is the New York Times, that Michigan has struggled to achieve its central goals. Listen to this. The percentage of black students, currently 5%, has remained largely stagnant at Michigan. Overall enrollment rose. This is a state where 14% of the residents are black. It's stagnant at 5% enrollment. And a less positive campus climate is reported currently than at the start of DEI. There's no sense of belonging.
Who doesn't have a sense of belonging?
Minority students.
I didn't ever have a sense of belonging either, and I wasn't a minority. In college, why do you have to have a sense of belonging? You better make your grades or your dad makes you come home.
Well, it's that simple.
That's your sense of belonging. I don't get that.
Well, anyway. you are of an older age, you and I. never went through. Maybe we could ask Wesley.
I bet that's true. Blacks, Holland, whites, yeah. Browns, and everybody else.
That's a really good point. All joking aside, I developed some friends on college, like when I went to Boston College.
Right.
You know, my roommates and stuff. Right. But the school didn't say, hey, we want you to feel welcome here, like it's your home away from home.
Got to have a safe space, babies.
I had to go to the cafeteria and eat food that my mother wouldn't even throw out. I didn't feel like I was at home.
All right, let me continue. I got a couple other statistics things to throw at you. According to the New York Times, instead of improving students' ability to engage with one another across their differences, Michigan's DEI expansion has coincided with an explosion in campus conflict over race and gender. I think that's a feature of DEI, not a bug. Just my opinion. Complaints involving race, religion, national origin increased almost 400 from a few dozen of roughly the same period a year ago. In the 18-month period ending in February, out of 67 complaints, this is how good they're doing it at DEI, out of 67 complaints of harassment or discrimination based on national origin or sexual orientation, an overwhelming majority involving anti-Semitism after October 7th, a total tally of one has been investigated and they've found findings. One out of 67 since last October.
First of all, how many students attend Michigan?
You're probably talking 50.
More than a dozen. I don't know.
Well, I'm just saying, and you're talking about like on their main Ann Arbor campus?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess 40 to 50,000.
Because 67 reports of discrimination.
Right, out of 50,000 people.
On 40,000? A campus of that size.
Yeah.
That's just.
And they're spending $250 million. Quarter of a million dollars or quarter of a
billion? $250 million.
And they've got 241 people in charge of this?
That's right.
I'll make a prediction in the next 2 years, 18 months or 2 years.
Brent says 52,000 students.
Tim was right.
They're going to follow suit with all the other, a lot of the other college campuses and companies that they say this is not worth the money. We're going to have to can't.
I agree.
Michigan, clearly
not worth the money.
It's not worth the money, especially when your football team's losing.
you better put
that money in football if you want to get back up there.
Actually, I want to see them apply DEI to their football team.
Well, listen to what you were just talking about. With 50,000 students, 67 complaints, one they investigated for $250 million, 241 jobs.
That they put into this.
And it's increasing division on the campus.
Right. So they're closing it down.
No, they're not. They're doubling down.
The point of this story for me was that it fails.
Okay, again, to repeat, because people may be confused, we're talking about, this is a report about diversity, equality.
Equity.
Yes, diversity, equity, and inclusion program on the campus of the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, and it's a big flop.
Diversity, inclusion, got you. Equity?
Equity is equality of outcome.
Okay, I got you.
So it's not like we always used to think about everyone gets the same opportunity.
It's a liberal's paradise.
This is where we want to make sure that oppressed groups have the same outcomes as privileged groups.
I want to be a part of that.
To which I
you're an oppressor.
Oh, sorry.
To which I ask how often.
Yeah.
How often what?
How often do they have to have equal outcome? Because, you know, once you give them equal outcome, you give them the leg up, you give more money to people that aren't, then 10 years down the line, the people that work harder are going to have more again. And then we're going to have to go all over.
Yeah, it's just liberal gobbledygook nuttiness.
It is.
Huh? That's all it is. Next story, Steve.
All right. Well, Kamala Harris is involved as in another scandal.
Another one?
Well, yes, another one. Christopher Rufo, who is a reporter.
I know who he is.
More
I've
conservative.
Met him before.
Yeah. He's with the Manhattan Institute. Anyway, he has done some research. Apparently, Kamala Harris had a book out called Smart on Crime, A Career Prosecutor's Plan to Make Us Safer. This came out several years ago. And Christopher Rufo took a look and found a number of instances of plagiarism in the book.
By Kamala Harris?
By Kamala Harris. She actually lifted entire paragraphs from Wikipedia without attributing it. Do you remember several years ago, the first time that Joe Biden decided to run for president, it was several years ago, and he got caught plagiarizing the life experience of a British politician?
I did that too, though. I mean, that you you know what I'm saying?
The reason you're
I'm
not
just
president.
Saying that can happen to anybody.
It's the reason you're not president of the United States. You're president of this ministry, but...
Okay, I just want, anyway, I just want it, to come
we're
clean.
We're going to have to go back. Everybody take a note of this. We're going to have to look into this.
It you know, used to ruin...
Dad, if you've done this...
I have. I'm
it
sorry.
Used to ruin careers.
Look, yeah, but it's... what's... this is two strikes on one swing, okay? Not only is she caught plagiarizing, but she's caught plagiarizing from Wikipedia.
Right.
That's like stealing a line out of a comic book.
Right.
All right? It's not out of a work from a professor of history. It's kind of Wikipedia.
Her, it's kind of her speed, I got to say. But so the New York Times is
Did
having-
Did she really do this?
Yes.
Oh, well. How long ago? That was her book about 12 or 15 years
2009.
Ago.
Oh, would that not be great if Brett Baer asked about that tonight?
Well, yeah. He might. He might. That would be pretty bold.
Yeah.
Especially if you just lifted.
Entire paragraphs.
Right? So, well, off Wikipedia.
Off Wikipedia. By the way.
That's its own level of scorn.
Yes.
Am I right?
Yo, you're right. Listen, I'm not dissing Wikipedia per se.
No.
I like Wikipedia. Wikipedia is a good jumping off place.
For dummies.
A lot of... well,
And I subscribe.
I don't claim to be anything other than that.
Right.
But I will go to Wikipedia, and they have... And it's pretty well sourced. Then I just go to the original source if I need to look up and get some facts.
I'll just say you cannot use Wikipedia in a college paper. They will fail you.
Right. But you can use it if you're going to...
It's a good starting point to launch off. Yes, you can.
And you're writing a book.
Well, she didn't know at that time she was going to run for president. This is.
I don't know. Well, no, she might not have. But the New York Times is having none of this. They reported on this. First of all, they reported the headline for the New York Times is "Conservative Activist Seizes on Passages from Harris' Book." This is a conservatives jumped or pounced on this.
You're saying the New York Times is running cover for her?
Oh, totally. In a couple ways.
Okay. I'm shocked.
They are underestimating, even though Christopher Rufo sent them several dozen examples, they only took five and got some plagiarism expert to say it wasn't that serious. Their headline isn't Kamala Harris plagiarized, but it's conservatives are noticing. And then just because they wanted to provide some cover, they got two of their opinion columnists, who used to be book reviewers, to write a column on Melania Trump's book called Melania. Let me tell you what they had to say about this. And it's relevant because, well, if we're going to talk about books, let's talk about this one instead of Harris's book. One of them, whose name is Pamela Paul, says, "It's funny you say it's like a conventional memoir because I feel like it was barely a book. It's a book-adjacent object. But it's not actually a book."
I listen, this sounds terrible. I look forward to the day when the New York Times goes bankrupt and has to fire all these people.
Yeah.
And they have to go get a real job writing for Wikipedia. listen, I was going to kid around about Kamala Harris and just say I am very disappointed that she plagiarized.
Yeah.
But nobody's going to believe that I'm surprised by this.
Listen, at this... Go ahead.
I was just going to say, she clearly does not have the intellectual ability to be at the top of the political food chain. She may be adequate for being Attorney General of California, but she shouldn't be President of the United States with, and I'm not saying it's because she's a Democrat. I'm saying because she is not equipped for that position.
I could probably get in trouble for this, but I have trouble thinking if she's got the mental equipment to serve fries at McDonald's. She just
seemed lacking for a while in that area. She says.
Yeah.
while she's growing up in a middle class family.
Right. Steve, if I were you, I wouldn't be ordering.
Beat me to it.
Steve, if I were you, I wouldn't be going through the drive through McDonald's or something. I think
not with that Paisley shirt.
You may be a target.
It might be.
For the
Well, I'll tell you what, our local McDonald's, they're not going to throw a milkshake at you. I know that because the machine's broken.
That's right.
And it's always perpetually. Okay,
it's broken today, too, and tomorrow.
All right.
And I worked.
I'm sorry, Tim.
I worked the French fry line at Burger King.
Did you really?
Not McDonald's when I was in high school.
He burned his hand. He's about to give us a story.
Yep.
Well, I was just saying, so when Steve says, quote, what did you say? She doesn't have the intelligence. Mental, you're talking about, you're speaking for yourself, by the way, right?
Yes.
But at that age, you probably didn't.
Well, he said that may be true.
Yeah.
But he said that.
I remember you telling me about
Kamala Harris does not have the intelligence to work at the McDonald's serving fries.
I remember you telling about how you worked at Burger King in high school and you served French fries going uphill both ways.
Yes.
Yeah.
Barefooted too. We didn't have shoes back then. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
It was a tough life.
It was a middle class
family. As a fry server, Steve, I take offense at your.
All right. I'm kind of exaggerating for effect.
Your character.
She probably.
All right. Listen.
I don't.
Okay.
Take
I think we
need analogy.
In fairness, what I perceive as fairness, I'm going to be the balance. I'm going to be the liberal.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to pull a nail.
Bring it.
I don't think Kamala Harris is a reasonably intelligent person.
Yes.
Okay. Kamala Harris won. She won a statewide election as Attorney General in California. Yes, it's California. She won a statewide election to be voted United States Senator in California. I don't know that she ever ran for re-election. But. So I'm just saying she's a reasonably intelligent person, but but she's not highly intelligent. And of course there have been people who've been president who not, I wouldn't say quote, you don't have to be quote highly intelligent. You do have to have a lot of common sense and you have to have good people around you. But her problem is a big problem in the day and age in which we live. And that is she is not media savvy.
Right.
She cannot think on her feet very well at all. And you have to be sharp. You have to be quick. You have to have answers. Or either you look like a fool in today's 24/7 news cycle, sound bites. What do you call them when people make a little go viral? And that's why she gets so many accusations about giving answers in word salads. Word salads mean... It's a mix of a bunch of stuff that doesn't have any continuity and doesn't make any sense in the end. And that's what she gives you a lot of times for answers. Now, she's got it down where she's practiced a lot like she did during the debate with Trump where she says some stuff that sounds good and it's feel-good stuff, but there's no meat there. There's no definition of what she means by what she says. So that's why she gets slammed as being airheaded.
It's exposed more in a interview or a town hall than it is in a debate.
If you want to see it,
you can.
If you want to see it on display, watch tonight when Brett Baer interviews her. Well, I don't know how good. Maybe she'll hit it out of the ballpark, but that'll be the first time.
It will be.
I thought she had a good debate, but to your point, Wesley, and you can. Do you want to?
No.
You were going to say something on her debate performance.
Yeah, I was going to say that her debate performance, you're able to get first of all, like you've said before, she did surprise us all. She surprised me. I thought she did, from a debate standpoint, she did it. She did well. But you can cover up some of that, what we're criticizing her for in a debate style. But she has not been able to neutralize. It's been a negative, been a net loss. Since she's done town halls and interviews.
Yes.
Contrast that with who she's running against. Donald Trump knows how to string a sentence together. He knows how to think on his feet. One example. Donald Trump yesterday was at Bloomberg News talking with Bloomberg editor-in-chief John Micklewaith. They were talking about tariffs. I'm going to play this cut, and I tried to hear this in Kamala Harris's voice to see what it would sound like if she was saying these things. I just can't. It just is above and beyond her scope of knowledge, in my opinion. But listen to how Trump deals with an opposing point of view at Bloomberg News, talking about tariffs, cut six.
And yes, you're going to find some people who would gain from individual tariffs. The overall effect could be massive.
I agree. It's going to have a massive effect, positive effect. It's going to be a positive, not a negative.
Well,
let me know how committed you are to this, and it must be hard for you to, you know, spend 25 years talking about tariffs as being negative, and then have somebody explain to you that you're totally wrong. It'll have a negative. It will have. I'll go
40,
a step further.
40 million,
if you don't
40
do
million,
this,
President
this
Trump,
country
40
has
million,
no
40
chance.
Million jobs is a lot of jobs to rely on.
They're all coming back.
Those
You've
are 40
lost.
Million jobs. Those are 40 million jobs in America that rely on trade.
Are you ready? John Deere, great company. They announced about a year ago they're going to build big plants outside of the United States, right? They're going to build them in Mexico.
And you threatened
they're
them
also
with
tariffs
and they stopped.
That's right. I said, if John Deere builds those plants and not selling anything into the United States, they just announced yesterday they're probably not going to build the plants, okay? I kept the jobs here.
Listen, you got a great point, Steve. Here's, I think Kamala Harris, she may do well tonight. Depends on how hard Bret Baier is on her in terms of this interview. Her, part of her problem, and this produces the word salads, is she does not have the depth of knowledge necessary to be president. And so when she's asked difficult questions, she strings together, as I've said before, answers that sound like a high school student who's bluffing on an essay question. You repeat words from the question, you repeat words in your answer, and you throw a couple other things in there, like she was doing for a while after the Democratic National Convention. We used to talk about we need a new way forward. And she'll throw those
slogans.
Kinds of words in. Yes, they're fillers, and there's no depth to her knowledge. Now, like you said, Tim, she is probably plenty smart to do other jobs. I'm not smart enough to be president. I just freely admit that. I've got shoes on that are blue and brown, and I just learned today you're not supposed to do that.
Yeah,
okay, but
I'm not
she
judging
is not,
you.
She is not. She's not smart enough. She doesn't have the depth or the breadth
doesn't.
Of knowledge, which is why when she was asked about the border, she said, well, I've never been to Europe either.
I don't understand the point of your question.
Yes. She laughed and said, I don't understand the point of your question. Well, that's clear.
She's like frozen when she gets to a question she can't answer. And you'll see it in her eyes and her response. And I say that happens to a lot of people. Everybody's not good at everything. You know, some people have common sense and some people test well.
Except for we're talking about the vice president of
listen,
America.
Right. Listen for these clues tonight. If she starts an answer with, I was raised in a Midwestern middle class town, if she uses the word in terms of, that's a sign that she is searching for some answers.
Filler words.
She talks about Venn diagrams. She's clearly not comfortable with the question.
You know what she should do? You know what Vice President Harris should do
what?
Tonight? She should do a Karl Rove and pull out a whiteboard. I would pull out a whiteboard. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
And I don't mean this to sound in any way racial, but a whiteboard. I would pull out a whiteboard or a blackboard. I don't care.
Right.
And start doing some diagrams.
Venn diagrams.
For Bret Baier.
Yeah.
Huh? Don't you think that would be?
I think that makes things worse.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. Because then it really becomes clear. Then people take screenshots.
Right.
And it becomes a meme.
Then it becomes a comedy skit.
Oh, so you think she's going to start tonight, whatever he asked with, I was raised in a middle-class family.
She might not use that. She's been called out on that.
I bet she'll get that in the first.
All right, we'll see what happens. We'll see you back here tomorrow.